Hello, this is Sarah with the News Gazette, dated Friday, June 26th, 2026. We'll begin today's recording on the front page with the article headlined, "The Brown Bag Deli, Still a Staple." Eatery celebrates 50th anniversary a year after founder's death. By Jana Wiersema. Monticello. After working as a retail buyer at an area department store, Harlan Swing made up her mind. She, to be very frank, said, "I don't want to work for another man again," said daughter Leslie Sims. Additionally, Harlene and Sims' stepfather, Jack Swing, felt that Monticello needed a deli, so they set out to create one. The Brown Bag Deli opened at 212 West Washington Street in July 1976 and has been a downtown staple ever since. The business's matriarch died in May 2025, 11 years after Jack's death, and 1 year before the deli reached the 50-year mark. "It's very hard," said Sims, who took over the business about 15 years ago. "I wish she would have made it. I think she would have been really excited to see the town support that we hope that will become out of this Saturday. I may be a big part of the Brown Bag, and my husband too, but she was the biggest part." While Harlene won't be there in person to celebrate alongside her daughter, one might say that she'll be there in spirit, or at least in the form of a cardboard cutout that customers can take pictures with. The Brown Bag will celebrate its golden anniversary with a party starting at 6 p.m. Saturday. Plans include a performance by bluegrass band High Cotton, sales of limited edition t-shirts marking the anniversary, outdoor grilling by Sunset Acres, beverages from the Dirt Poor Traveling Bar, and, of course, a life-size cutout of Harlene, Sims said. "People throughout the years either loved my mom or hated her," Sims said. "There is no middle ground with that. And so I have lots of memories of mom. She would just come out and sit down with people and start talking to them whether they liked it or not. She also was really good about making people feel special when it was their birthday." The restaurant also has been the site of first dates, proposals, and other memorable moments, not just for customers, but also for Sims, who called the business a second home. As a kid, she went to the deli after school instead of going home on a bus. As a high schooler, she worked there alongside all of her friends. As an adult, she had her bridal shower and rehearsal dinner there. She also can recall how the business has evolved over time. Sims' stepfather had been a professor of architecture at the University of Illinois. He said to Harlene, "If you want to do this, I will build it." And he did, Sims said. The Swings originally bought the building at 212 West Washington Street and later expanded into a neighboring building, which is where the large dining room is now located, Sims said. "We also extend back. My mom used to have a gourmet shop in the hallway," she said. "She used to have a card shop in the back, and now the hallway is just a hallway, and the back is now extended seating and also a rentable party room." Other changes over time included getting rid of the soda fountain, updating the building facade, and putting in booths. However, Sims said the biggest change has probably been technology. "Now we have a POS system," she said. "We have online ordering, and that's sort of where I come in. When I took over about 15 years ago." The Brown Bag isn't the only one celebrating. The restaurant's anniversary bash will be preceded by a West Washington Street block party hosted by Monticello Main Street from 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday. The event includes live music, food, and extended hours at downtown businesses. Monticello Main Street, which is focused on supporting the economic vitality and historic character of downtown, described the event as a chance to experience a part of downtown that has seen significant transformation. 5 years ago, about 65% of first floor spaces in the West Washington Street block were vacant, with only five businesses located in the 13 storefronts, officials said. Today, however, every first floor commercial space on the block is filled. "We've seen tremendous interest and investment from both property owners and businesses, and are thrilled this part of downtown is now thriving, said Shelley Crawford Stock, executive director of Monticello Main Street. It has taken direct intentionality, partnerships, and support from the city of Monticello in getting our buildings usable, businesses viable, and attention towards what needs to happen to make West Washington Street a thriving addition to our local economy. Back in the day, Jack and Harlene Swing owned the north side of West Washington Street, from Market to Charter Street, Sims said. As her mother and stepfather aged, however, so did the buildings, which fell into disrepair. Jack's original concept was that you would get from one building to the other without having to go outside, Sims added. And so there's lots of, like, intricate staircases and archways and weird stuff that he did that's not exactly disability-friendly. He had, like a lot of architects, a vision, but he wasn't practical. Sims inherited her mother's buildings, and Jack's daughters and grandsons inherited his. And both sets of owners have worked to improve and modernize the properties, she said. We're still working on it, Sims said. The back is not in great shape, but we have plans. We have future plans to get that going, but I would say it's looking a lot better. According to Monticello Main Street, the city of Monticello hopes to complement private investment in the block by completing a major streetscape project and improve accessibility and further improve the area. The success of this block demonstrates the power of historic downtown revitalization and a strong public-private partnership, Crawford Stock said. We're excited to celebrate how far West Washington Street has come while looking ahead to its future. When asked how it feels to see the brown bag make it to 50 years, Sims replied that it's pretty overwhelming. I think a lot of restaurants don't make it 50 years, she said. I think that's pretty rare. There's a lot of high death rates with restaurants. I think it's a tip of the hat to my mom, really, because she may have let it slip in her older years, but she must have done something right because we're still here. Obituaries. Ronald Berkman, Urbana. Ronald E. Berkman, 86, of Urbana, died Saturday, June 20th, 2026, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center. Kenneth Buchanan II, Mansfield. Kenneth Lee Buchanan II, 56, of Mansfield, died at his home Monday, June 22, 2026. Kenneth donated his body to science. The family will gather to remember and celebrate his life at the Elks Lake Pavilion, Lake of the Woods, Mahomet, on Sunday, July 12th, from noon to 2 p.m. Kathy Drew, Florence, South Carolina. Kathy Doreen Drew, 74, of Florence, South Carolina, passed away Monday, June 8th, 2026. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to a humane society of your choice in her honor. There will be a graveside service on July 3rd at 11 a.m. at Bailey Cemetery, Tolono. Later, her family will have a celebration of life at Myrtle Beach. You may leave condolences for the family at cdfuneralhome.com. Barbara Friels Rantoul, wife, mother, patriot. Barbara I. Friels, née Burkhalter, 96, of Rantoul, died Tuesday, June 23, 2026, at the Villas of Hollybrook and Reflections in Rantoul. Memorial and interment service will be at Green Lawn Cemetery Peace Garden, Mausoleum, 496 West County Road 200 South, Frankfort, Indiana, on Monday, June 29th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. In lieu of flowers, please send memorials desired to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation or St. Jude's Children Research Hospital. Karen King, Tuscola. Karen King, 73, of Tuscola, died Wednesday, June 24, 2026, at the Haven of Tuscola. Funeral services will be at 1 p.m. Monday at Hillegoss Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola, with the Reverend Mike Wilder officiating. Burial will follow in Tuscola Township Cemetery, Tuscola. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday at the funeral home. Darlene Wright, St. Joseph. Darlene K. Wright, 86, of St. Joseph, formerly of Homer, passed away Sunday, June 21, 2026, at home. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m., Saturday, June 27, at Homer New Life Church of Faith, 505 West Crittenden Street, Homer. Pastor C. W. Greer will officiate. Burial of cremated remains will take place at a later date at Old Homer Cemetery. Homer Funeral and Cremation Services is assisting the family. Memorials can be made to Homer New Life Church of Faith or the St. Joseph Fire Department. Everett Zimmerman, Champaign. Everett Zimmerman, 68, of Champaign, died Friday, June 19, 2026, at his home. Graveside services will be at 2 p.m. Sunday at Partlow Cemetery near Armstrong in Middle Fork Township. Renner Wyckoff Chapel and Crematory, 1900 South Philo Road, Urbana, is handling arrangements. Fatal Champaign shooting. First of two teenage suspects charged as adult. State seeks to treat second in the same way. By Luke Taylor. Urbana. The two teens arrested in connection with a fatal shooting Monday night in Champaign are both being detained pending trial, and the older of the two is already destined for adult court. State's attorney, Julia Reitz, said she also filed a petition for the younger of the pair, the 14-year-old male, to be tried in adult court, but that is awaiting a court date and a ruling from the judge. The older of the two, 16-year-old Ravi Neblett, was charged directly in adult court because of his age and the severity of the charges. Both were arrested Thursday and have been charged with murder and aggravated battery with a firearm in the incident in which one person died and another was injured. It began at 9:31 p.m. Monday, when officers were dispatched to the intersection of North McKinley Avenue and Paula Drive for a report of a shooting. Upon arrival, they found a 17-year-old male with gunshot wounds to his torso and were told about a second victim nearby. They found a 16-year-old male about a half block to the north in the 1500 block of North McKinley Avenue. He was taken to the hospital, where he was later pronounced dead. Reitz confirmed his identity as Christian Cowan of Champaign. Initial investigation determined that Mr. Cowan and the other victim were walking in the 1500 block of North McKinley when two people began shooting at them. Reitz said that investigators looked at surveillance footage from local businesses and residences, as well as from nearby license plate readers and cell phone data, to identify a gray sedan as a suspicious vehicle in the area. They learned the identities of the two suspects via the owner of that vehicle. Reitz said footage showed the victims going to the Star Fox liquor store on Bloomington Avenue, west of McKinley, and the two suspects showed up shortly after. They were seen looking through the window, then leaving very quickly. Police determined that the suspect's movement was consistent with the victims at the time of the shooting and were able to develop a connection between them. A search warrant was executed at each of the suspect's homes, where investigators found clothing consistent with that seen on surveillance footage, Reitz said. Additionally, the 16-year-old's phone contained footage of him with a firearm with a laser sight, which matched a description given by the surviving victim. Reitz said that the bullet casings found on the scene have been sent to the Illinois State Police Laboratory for testing. Following court appearances earlier this week, both suspects have been detained as they await the resolution of their cases. The 17-year-old victim remains hospitalized as he recovers from his injuries. This incident marks the fifth person under the age of 20 to die by gun violence in Champaign so far this year. History. Area history. In 1926, by the end of the year, the Illinois Service Recognition Board will have completed its work of paying out more than $55 million in bonuses to eligible Illinois servicemen, including about 2,276 soldiers from Champaign County. The veterans were granted a bonus of $1 for each day of service and an extra 25 cents for each day served overseas. Out of a total of 286,641 claims, only 102 remain to be processed. When that is done, the board will disband and turn over its records to the Adjutant General's Office. In 1976, 25 Illinois environmentalists and consumer advocates, mostly from the Champaign-Urbana area, have formed a group to oppose the rate increase Illinois Power Company has said it will request sometime this year. Illinois Power Project, Inc., a nonprofit, also plans to present the Illinois Commerce Commission with a series of reforms in utility rate structures designed to encourage energy conservation and ease the burden on lower-income groups. In 2011, Illinoisans donated almost $45,000 on their 2009 state income tax returns to crisis nurseries in Illinois, part of a checkoff system designed to help charitable causes. None of that money has reached the crisis nursery of Champaign County or any other nursery across the state. Instead, the money is being used to pay other state bills, at least temporarily. International history. Today's highlight. On June 26, 2015, in its 5-4 Obergefell v. Hodges decision, the U.S. Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage across the country, ruling that state-level bans on same-sex marriage violated the Due Process and Equal Protection Clauses of the 14th Amendment. On this date in 1917, U.S. troops entered World War I as the first soldiers of the American Expeditionary Force landed in Saint-Nazaire, France. On this date in 1945, the Charter of the United Nations was signed by 50 countries in San Francisco. On this date in 1948, the Berlin Airlift began in earnest after the Soviet Union cut off land and water routes to the isolated western sector of Berlin. Illinois men's basketball. Heading off to Charlotte. Hornets give Champaign native Boswell pro chance he's been chasing with two-way contract. By Scott Ritchie. Champaign. Kylan Boswell played an important role in the Illinois backcourt the past two seasons. The experienced guard, a veteran presence, next to some standout freshmen. Boswell watched them all get drafted. Jakunis and Will Riley were selected with back-to-back picks in the first round in 2025. Keaton Wagler went number 5 overall Tuesday night to the Los Angeles Clippers. Boswell ultimately didn't hear his name called during the 2026 NBA draft, but the Champaign native and former Edison Junior High and Urbana Middle School star signed a two-way contract with the Charlotte Hornets on Thursday. "My defensive ability, I feel like, is my ticket," Boswell said during the NBA draft combine in Chicago in May. "Drew Holiday is who I watch a lot. Of course, that's a huge step to get to that point. But I think all of this for me is good to have new learning lessons. The NBA is a totally different game than college basketball." I think I've been in almost any situation possible with basketball other than being in the NBA. The preparation and that mental clarity of just knowing yourself and trusting yourself, and that confidence I was talking about. I've played with a bunch of big-name guys and been a part of playing with a bunch of big-name guys. Boswell's two-way deal is not guaranteed. He'll still have to prove himself to stick with the Hornets starting with the NBA Summer League set for July 9 through 19th in Las Vegas. Charlotte traded point guard LaMelo Ball to the Minnesota Timberwolves on Thursday, but the Hornets did draft Texas Tech's Christian Anderson Jr. in the first round, and they'll bring back Kobe White and Trey Mann. Boswell earned all Big Ten defensive team honors and averaged 12.3 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists in his second season in Champaign after starting his career with 2 seasons at Arizona. From 16-year-old Kylan to 21-year-old Kylan is 2 different human beings, Boswell said. My path and my journey at Arizona was a lot of downs and trying to get back up mentally in the clarity that I need to be myself. Coming to Illinois was the best decision I made. These last 2 years at Illinois have helped me prepare my new journey of who I will be in the NBA. It's sad, a bittersweet situation. I remember coming in as a 16-year-old freshman at Arizona, and now leaving Illinois, you never think it's going to end, but time flies. I feel like an old head saying that, but it's serious. I've appreciated everything. This past year really embraces the journey. The struggles and the good and everything that came with this last season. That was really nice for me. Finishing my career going to the Final Four was a blessing. Executive orders. Court rejects president's attempt to create voter list. Administration plans to appeal. Boston. A federal judge on Thursday halted President Donald Trump's executive order that sought to create a federal voter list and limit who can receive a mail ballot. U.S. District Court Judge Indira Talwani, who was nominated by Democratic President Barack Obama, sided with a coalition of nearly 24 states that challenged the Republican president's order in granting a summary judgment. Her ruling applies to this year's midterm election cycle. Plaintiffs argued in 2 lawsuits, both filed in federal court in Boston, that Trump's order should be found unconstitutional because the states and Congress, not the president, have the power to set election rules. The judge agreed, saying in her ruling that the provisions of Trump's order seeking to create a federal list of eligible voters and using the U.S. Postal Service to determine who can receive a mail ballot are legally void because they unconstitutionally violate the separation of powers. It was the second ruling in as many days against executive orders Trump has signed seeking oversight of the nation's elections. A separate ruling Wednesday prohibited an executive order he had signed last year that would have required people to show documents proving their citizenship when registering to vote. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mayes, whose state was among the plaintiffs, celebrated the court's decision. Millions of independents, Republicans, and Democrats across Arizona have voted by mail for decades, she said in a statement, noting that nearly 80% of ballots in the state are cast by that method. Mays, a Democrat, singled out military families, voters in the state's rural expanses, and Native Americans who cast ballots from tribal lands. Donald Trump's executive order targeted all of these voters, she said. But today, the courts affirmed what the Constitution makes clear. States run their elections, not the president. The White House stood by Trump's executive order and indicated the administration would appeal the ruling. The order, said spokeswoman Abigail Jackson, lawfully protects our elections, and we are confident that we will ultimately prevail in its implementation. The administration, in its motions to dismiss the lawsuits challenging the order, argued that the motions were premature and that plaintiffs lacked their legal basis to bring their claim based on the Administrative Procedure Act, which governs how federal agencies develop and issue regulations. On the town, an occasional photo spotlight from an area event. Today, the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine's Round Barn Ribbon Cutting Ceremony, Tuesday, at the Round Barns near St. Mary's Road in Urbana. On Tuesday, the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine held a ribbon cutting ceremony to officially dedicate the university's Round Barns to Leah J. Whiteman, a U of I alumna who had a special place in her heart for Round Barns. Around 130 guests attended the event at the Round Barns, which have stood near St. Mary's Road in Urbana for more than 100 years. The event included speeches from U of I leaders and friends of the late Whiteman, and tours of two of the three barns. Whiteman spent her life in central Illinois, growing up on a farm near Arcola, down the road from a Round Barn. She then led a successful career at Parkland College. Thanks to her generous $10 million gift, the College of Veterinary Medicine has undertaken a renovation project to restore the three barns. In 1994, the barns earned a place on the National Register of Historic Places as part of the university's Illinois Experimental Dairy Farm Historic District. At that time, the barns were actively being used. The current renovation project, focused on securing the roofs and exteriors of the barns and the adjacent manager's house, is scheduled to be completed by spring 2027. Photo by Bradley Lieb shows the white round barn with orange and blue fabric draped on the door and 20 people sitting in front of the door. Special guests at the Round Barns ribbon cutting ceremony on Tuesday included members of the Round Barn Society, alumni of the College of Aces who posed for a group photo. There were also many friends and relatives of Leah J. Whiteman and her lifelong friend Don Overton, as well as students, faculty, and staff members from the College of Veterinary Medicine. The next image shows five people cutting an Illinois ribbon in front of the white doors of the Round Barn. The official ribbon cutting took place in front of the easternmost barn, the 20-acre dairy barn. Those cutting the ribbon are event speakers Anna Ball, Associate Dean for Academic Programs in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, John Coleman, Provost and Executive Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs, and Peter Constable, Dean of the College of Veterinary Medicine. The next image shows a group of people looking up inside of the domed structure of the Round Barn. The walls and the roof are wooden, and there are windows with light shining in. Guests were allowed to tour the westernmost barn, the Dairy Experiment Barn. Entering from the south, they saw a large open space where tractors could drive in. Constable points out a feature of the barn on this level. After going down a narrow wooden staircase, they viewed the lower level where the dairy cows once entered. This has been Sarah with the News Gazette, Friday, June 26, 2026. I look forward to reading again with you soon.